The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and KPCG.fm for the live stream, that live broadcast now. If you're outside the United States, I failed to mention this on Friday, so we might be missing a few people from our live audience. But if you're outside the United States for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be broadcasting 1 hour earlier. So we're coming to you today in the UK at noon instead of 1 o'clock, and on the continent, it's 1 o'clock instead of two. And then for everyone else, you'll have to do the math. It's basically an hour earlier because daylight savings time in the U.S., it comes early. And for the first time, I think, since we've been broadcasting here at Edstone, there's a 3 week gap. Typically, I think it's 2 weeks. So for whatever reason, the clocks move forward early in March in the U.S. and then late in March, at least here in the U.K. So hopefully you can make that adjustment if you listen live. If you don't, if you listen to the podcast as it's posted on thetrumpet.com or the kpcg.fm website, of course, nothing changes there. We'll still be posting the programs every day, just a few hours after the live broadcast finishes. Well, we've got a lot to get to on today's program. Speaking of today, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, he arrives in Iraq for his first official state visit. It's the first one since he's taken office in 2013, and we'll underscore the significance of this trip in the second segment. It was preceded, by the way, by Zarif, the foreign minister. He was there over the weekend, basically laying the groundwork for Rouhani's visit. And for our longtime listeners and readers, of course, you know that we've been saying since the early 1990s that Iran would eventually take over Iraq. So we'll go through some familiar prophecies in Daniel 11. And also remind you of some of the things that my father has said and written over the past couple of decades. Today is also the 30th anniversary of the day that the 1150 days prophecy ended. Daniel 8, of course. We'll spend most of our time, at least as far as the Bible is concerned, we'll spend most of our time in the book of Daniel today. Because there's a prophecy, I mentioned Daniel 11, Daniel 8 contains this prophecy about the truth being cast down within God's own church, and then how that truth, that work would be restored or revived 1150 days later. So that prophecy, it starts with the death of Herbert Armstrong, January the 16th, 1986. And then you move forward 1150 days, and that brings you to this day, or March 11th anyway, 1989. And so we arrive on this day, 30 years on from that remarkable prophecy, God getting into so much detail in the book of Daniel and other prophetic works, other prophetic passages. But think of it, God actually recording some of these events that we've lived through in the last 30 or 40 years, right there in the Holy Bible, in some cases written 2,500, 3,000 years ago. Only out of the mind of God could something like this happen. My father has also given quite a few programs and written quite a few articles over the years regarding this 1150-day prophecy. He had a Key of David program from 2005 that goes by that very title, the 1150 Days Prophecy. We'll start with a clip from that show, clip 6.
The book of Daniel is for this end time, and the prophet Daniel prophesied about a 1150-day period where the work of God would just simply stop. It would stop, and that it is the only work of God, and it just simply wasn't there anymore.
So it came to a screeching halt there with the death of Herbert Armstrong. Now, if you look at the prophecy, Daniel 8, the last part of that chapter, verse 26, it speaks of this prophecy relating to the far future. That's from the Moffat translation. And then verse 17 in the Revised Standard, it says that the vision is for the time of the end. So here is the prophet Daniel receiving this revelation some 2,500, 2,600 years ago. And it's for our days. It's for our time today. Notice verse 9. This is Daniel 8. It says, "And out of them, out of one of them, I should say, came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land." So this prophecy, I don't have time to get into all of the details here, but suffice it to say that this little horn refers to Antiochus Epiphanes in the history that happened there following Daniel's writing. He came out from these four divisions from the Greek Empire. And basically bridged the gap between the Greco-Macedonian Empire and the Roman Empire. So Antiochus, we've written about him quite a lot, and of course you know about the Antiochus in prophecy, how that this is dual, but anciently he was a ruthless dictator, and he came on the scene. He acquired his power through deceitful lies and flatteries, and he was responsible for setting up the abomination of desolation. This is around the 160s, 170s BC. Antiochus pillaged and desecrated the Jews' temple in Jerusalem. He really targeted the Jews. He went after the Jews. Verse 10 says, "And it waxed great even to the host of the heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them." So as I say, this had a fulfillment to some degree in the time of the original Antiochus, but it's primarily, as this chapter itself brings out, it's primarily for the last days. This evil power prophesied to stamp upon God's people, the saints of God who transgressed God's law. They allowed this attack because of transgression. Now, host. You look at the word host there in verse 10. That can refer to an army of demons or an army of angels or an army of men. God, of course, has an army of angels, but Satan has a demon army as well. And he's used his army to attack God's people. Verse 11 says, "Yes, he magnified himself even against," it should read, "even against the prince of the host, and by him the daily." The daily, it says daily sacrifice, but the word sacrifice is in italics, added by translators. "By him the daily," in other words, the work, God's work, "was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down." This attack against Jesus Christ, the prince of the host. Think of the arrogance of Satan the devil. Going against Jesus Christ, our commander, and the army of God, and the people of God. And his objective, pure and simple, it's to destroy the work, to stop the daily. We've gone through 2 Thessalonians 2 recently on this program and during one of our public appearance campaigns, the one up in Belfast. But you think of that prophecy of the man of sin, 2 Thessalonians 2, "Don't let any man deceive you." This imposter, he came right into the church of God, a son of destruction, a type of Antiochus, a type of the son of perdition, as it says there in 2 Thessalonians 2. an evil rebel who, as verse 4 in that passage says, opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God, right in the temple of God or the church of God. This man who put himself above God himself. We've seen it, some of us who've been around for a while. We live through it. That man of sin who came on the scene following the death of Herbert Armstrong in 1986. This aligns perfectly with what we're reading here in Daniel 8. Again, verse 11 says, yes, he magnified himself. He magnified himself. 2 Thessalonians 2:4 says, he opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God. Similar language. He magnifies himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily was taken away. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. This evil Antiochus, he was with the backing of Satan the devil and his demon army. He brought on this attack, this fight against God himself. But again, you have to keep in mind that the people of God allowed this because of transgression. My father's booklet, Daniel Unsealed at Last, it says, these are two great sins, or rather, there are two great sins. The daily, or the work of God, has been taken away by this evil man. Also, the place of the sanctuary, the place where God's work was being done, was cast down. He just smashed the work of God, that headquarters operation that used to come out from Pasadena, California. Notice verse 12, it says, and an host was given him against the daily by reason of transgression. So it was sin. It was sin that allowed for this attack. And it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and it prospered. It really did prosper in those late years of the 1980s. It practiced, it prospered. And then verse 13, this is the prophecy that we're highlighting in particular. It says, then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto the certain saint which spoke, how long shall the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? How long is this going to happen? How long will the work of God stop? So here are Philadelphians during the final era of God's church, the Laodicean era, Philadelphians whose hearts are in the work, crying out, how long is the work going to stop? The saints, their hearts, their thoughts, their focus is on finishing the work. This is something I want to concentrate on even this weekend at Glasgow, our upcoming Glasgow pack. How important is it to put your heart into the work, God's work? How thankful we ought to be to know there's a plan in place and that work cannot be stopped. At least it can't be stopped forever. It was for 1,150 days. So these saints, they ask, how long is this going to continue? And in verse 14, you see the response. He said to me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. It's not the best translation there, and you can see this in the Revised Standard and any good commentary. It's speaking of 2,300 evening and morning sacrifices. In other words, 1,150 days. And at the end of that 1,150 days, the sanctuary would be cleansed. It would be cleaned. The work of God would be revived. And so the beginning of this time period, as is revealed especially 2 Thessalonians 2, Herbert Armstrong was taken out of the way. I think that's verse 7, verse 8. He's taken out of the way, January 16th, 1986. And then you move forward 1,150 days, as I said at the top of the segment, and you come to March 11th, 1989. My father wrote in the Daniel booklet shortly before his death in 1986, even though the work had grown abundantly for 7 years, Mr. Armstrong still perceived a liberal undercurrent within the church. He even said there were those who, like vultures, wanted him to die so that they could take over the church. Well, he did die January the 16th, and they did try to take over the church. That church was conquered by the devil and his demon army. That's what your Bible says. This really is one of the worst defeats in the history of God's church. 1,150 days. But that ended, and we can thank God for this. Think about Malachi's message. Think about the work of the PCG. It ended on March 11th, 1989, the end of the 1,150 days prophecy. And of course, that would have been about 9 months or so before my father was fired for what was written in Malachi's message. And the significance of March 11th, 1989, that's when that God started to open my father's mind to the truth. To the truth contained in Malachi's message. This too is something we've really been trying to spotlight at the PAC appearances. Because there are some Laodiceans that have been out in the woodwork for a long time, and they need to be reminded of these prophecies, of the significance of Malachi's message, and before that, Mystery of the Ages. If you look at, and some of this history is discussed in Malachi's message and also Raising the Ruins, if you look at those early months of 1989, this was before my father and John Amos were fired. That was December 7th, 1989. But the early months of 1989, this is when the Worldwide Church of God was discontinuing the work, Mr. Armstrong's magnum opus, Mystery of the Ages. That was announced in the January 31st, 1989 PGR. It was actually put into place months before that, but the church heard about it on January 31st, and then 2 weeks after that, Mr. DeKoch, he was Mr. Armstrong's successor, but he talked about the book being discontinued in the PGR, February 14th, 1989. And my father called me. I was out at AC at the time at Pasadena attending as a freshman. And it was right around that time, mid-February, late February, where for the first time I heard him talk about some serious problems that he was observing in the Church of God. He was telling me as a freshman student, and you talk about a jolt, he was telling me about how ministers were saying things that if Mr. Armstrong were still around, they'd be fired for it. So some earth-shaking changes happening in the church. And he was especially upset, my father was, about Mystery of the Ages being discontinued. He was saying in late February that, well, we may be in the Laodicean era. We've been anticipating this for decades. And we know it'll follow the Philadelphia era. And wouldn't you know it, just a week or two after these conversations I had with him over the phone, you come to March 11th, 1989. We don't have anything in our own writings about what specifically happened on that day, but we do have the prophecy of God, and we have some other dates in January and February of 1989. And then, of course, I first read Malachi's message on July 16th, 1989, so that's about 4 months or so after the 1,150 days ended. Then my father's fired on December 7th later that year. So you can get a pretty good timeline just by plugging in all of these dates and then come to know that it was on March 11th that God first opened his mind and he started pouring revelation into his church, his work. The work resumed. It started small. It was like a mustard seed beginning. It started with one man and Malachi's message. But that was the beginning of this radio program, the Trumpet website, the Trumpet, all the materials, the literature, the litigation, the court case, the campuses, the worldwide work, the Key of David program. All of it started with these events, these dramatic events in 1989. Verse 14 again says, and he said to me, unto 2,300 days or 2,300 sacrifices, evening and morning sacrifices. In other words, 1,150 days. Once that ended, then the work was restored to its rightful state. Finally, how long is this going to go on? How long will this continue? It continued for 1,150 days, a little more than 3 years. And then the sanctuary was cleansed. And then the work resumed. And we've had our battles with Satan's demon army ever since, particularly during that 6 years of litigation. But think of the detail. These prophecies recorded thousands of years in advance. Consider what my father said here. This is from a Key of David program in 2005, clip 8.
Can you imagine God over 2,500 years ago giving us all of this minute detail about Daniel for this end time? What can you imagine the mind that God has and the power He has? Can you imagine how much He knows about you and me and what's going on in His church and what isn't going on and what's going on in this world? A God with this mind and this power who could prophesy all this over 2,500 years ago.
2,500 years in advance. What a mind. We've been talking in some of our forums here at college about the mind of God and how that this is what we're here to acquire. Let this mind be in you, the mind of Jesus Christ. What is uppermost in the mind of Christ? What is uppermost in the mind of God? Recently in epistles class, we went through the book of Ephesians. We're now into Colossians and Philemon. But in Ephesians, there's that verse in Ephesians 3, verse 9, where it talks about how that we need to make all men see, to make them see this mystery and the importance of dispensing with the message. That's what that word dispensation means. It's been hidden, this mystery. I should say the word fellowship. It should be more properly translated dispensation. To make all men see what is the fellowship or the dispensation or the need to distribute this message, this mystery. Mystery of the ages and all these other works. Helping people come along into this church, this remnant work, and to understand the importance of each individual role and how that we're here to do a work. We're here to finish God's work, and we have to make all men see this. We have to help them understand that the mystery needs to be dispensed. My father wrote back in April of 2011. This was a coworker letter, and he was talking about the March 11th anniversary. And he even talked about some of the sobering events that happened that year, actually on March 11th, this devastating, catastrophic earthquake in Japan, and then this horrific murder just outside of Jerusalem, the Fogel family, I think their name was. But he made the point in this coworker letter that God really wants for us to see how urgent this message is. And how that what you saw in the West Bank or in that devastating earthquake, that's just a tiny, tiny, tiny little drop in the bucket. And how urgent is our message to be delivered to this world, to be delivered to our nations? And he tied in the importance of serving in the work. He said the Laodiceans did not have their heart in God's work It wasn't their top priority, but it must be ours because it is our Father's top priority. God is reminding us, he wrote, he's reminding us of that to try to wake us up to that responsibility as much as he possibly can. I think that many of us are lagging in this area. We simply must get God's message to Britain, Judah, and America. That's why we exist. That's why we are here. And so on this anniversary date, we can't ever, not on this date, not ever, we can't forget why we're here in God's work, why we're here in God's church, what we're here to do. We're here to support the work. That's a message, as I say, I'd like to take with me to Glasgow this weekend. We've got our PAC campaign in Glasgow Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, and then the week following that, my father has his PAC appearance in Portland. So a lot coming up these next couple of weeks, and of course, after that, we're coming up quick to the spring holiday season as well. When we come back, we'll get into this visit, Rouhani's visit to the state of Iraq, and we'll tie that into a prophecy that many of you are familiar with over in Daniel 11. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If the church came into existence as an instrumentality for getting people saved, then by what means did God try to save people prior to Christ's founding of the church? Jesus did not appear until 4,000 years after Adam and the original sin. If God is and has been trying to convert the world, what means did he use during that 4,000 years between Adam and Christ? Few people in the traditional Christian world have ever stopped to even consider these questions. To nearly everyone on earth, the very existence of the church is a great mystery. The biblical facts of the church's origin and its purpose for being are clearly revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages. Request your complimentary copy today. It's offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
That's former President George W. Bush almost 16 years ago announcing the invasion of Iraq, saying that coalition forces would disarm Saddam Hussein's army and free its people and defend the world from grave danger. That seems like such a long time ago. A lot has happened since that time, 2003. And as I said in the first segment, today you have the president of Iran. He's arriving in Iraq for his first official state visit. And this is supposed to pave the way for a broad trade relationship. And it's really an attack on the United States. The sanctions that the U.S. is imposing. This is Iran saying, hey, we don't care what the U.S. does. We've got other options. Rouhani's going to be visiting a Shia shrine in the Iraqi capital. And then he's going to meet with the president and the prime minister of Iraq, and talk about strengthening economic ties between these two nations. And again, you won't see much about this in the mainstream media coverage. They're too obsessed with all things Donald Trump. But this is significant. It is significant. It comes, as I say, it comes right at the time when the U.S. is trying to cut Iran off from other nations. And so here is Rouhani. This visit announces to the world, particularly to the United States, that Iraq is now firmly in the Iranian camp. And we know that's important because of what your Bible prophesies. We consider this trip a new start in our relations with Iraq. That's what Iranian Foreign Minister Javed Zarif said on Saturday. As I said, he was sort of laying the groundwork for Rouhani's visit. And Zarif was there. He was, of course, the big pal of John Kerry when they were trying to finalize the JCPOA, the Obama administration, with Iran. He was there talking about the joint interests and the regional cooperation between Iran and Iraq. He was there talking about a new start of relations, a start that's going to feature less and less the United States, less and less American influence. And so for years of straddling the fence, think about that quote from President Bush. We're going to go in there and topple Saddam Hussein and free the Iraqi people. Freedom. Free to do what? Well, freedom to join up with Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. And for a few years, it seemed, Iraq was sort of straddling the fence between the Iranian influence and the U.S. influence. But today, Iraq's government fully embraces Iran. And that's exactly what your Bible prophesied. Like I said there, or rather I played for you in the first segment. Think of it. Think of the mind of God 2,500 years in advance and giving us all of this detail. My father, in a sermon, this is from 2006, he talked about Iran's takeover of Iraq. Here's clip two.
We see Iran virtually taking over Iraq, and we've said all along for years and years that you're not going to conquer this and win this terrorist war until you kill the head of the terrorist snake. It is not going to happen. And Europe will soon see that and soon deal with that problem.
That's my father from 2006. And, well, we were saying things like that long before that even. I'll bring that to your attention here in just a moment. But as part of this visit, Rouhani's visit to Iraq today, they're planning to boost trade relations between the two nations. As I said, they're going to boost the numbers from $13 billion to $20 billion. On Saturday, when Zarif was there laying the groundwork for the visit, he thanked Iraq for having refused the unjust and illegal sanctions imposed on the Iranian people. Think of it. Zarif, he's there in Iraq. After all these years, after everything the United States has done for Iraq, here is the top foreign diplomat of Iran in Iraq saying, thank you. Thank you, Iraq, for refusing the unjust and illegal sanctions imposed on the Iranian people. There was another senior Iranian official during that visit who said that Iraq is another channel for Iran to bypass America's unjust sanctions imposed on Iran. He said this trip will provide opportunities for Iran's economy. Now think about what is prophesied, as I say, for those of you familiar with the trumpet, for those of you familiar with what my father has written over the past 25 years or so. This visit, today's visit, comes as no surprise. This is one of the longest standing forecasts that we've had at the trumpet. The rise of the prophesied king of the south, headed up by Iran, If you go back even to the first year of Trumpet magazines, we only started the Trumpet in 1990. In the first segment, I talked about the beginning of this work, the end of that 1150 days prophecy, March 11th, 1989. Malachi's message, first read July 16th, 1989. My father, John Amos, fired December 7th, 1989. Then Malachi's message, I talked about this earlier this year, Malachi's message goes out in January, on or around January 16th, 1990. And then the month after that, the trumpet starts, February. Later that year, in the September-October issue of the Trumpet magazine, September 1990, my father asked if the King of the South was now on the world scene. He said that this king would be a Middle Eastern power bloc. Several nations, not just one. He talked about Saddam Hussein's influence. This was before even the first Gulf War. And my father said, regarding this King of the South, the prophecy in Daniel 11:40 that the king of the south would push at the European king of the north. He said in 1990, it doesn't have to be Saddam Hussein, though it could well be, or it well could be, I should say. Even if it isn't Saddam Hussein, the king of the south shall rise in that part of the world. And soon it's going to rise in that part of the world. And then after that first Gulf War ended, with Saddam Hussein still in power, my father then had another article. This is from July of 1992, An Islamic King of the South. And he just talked about the immense population that would support this movement and their control over so much of the oil production and their acquisition of weapons of mass destruction. Then think about this statement. This is July of 1992. My father said the King of the South could rule Iraq or Iran, or both countries, but it's looking more now like Iran may produce this king. That's in 1992. Who else was saying that in 1992? That Iran would be the dominant power in the region. It's prophesied. That's why we said it. The year after that, 1993, my father said, these verses point to a king of the South that is yet future, and I believe all indications point to radical Islam headed by Iran as this king. So by the end of 1993, he felt pretty sure that it was going to be Iran and that it would lead this grouping of radical Islamist nations. Then the end of next year, this is the article we refer to so often, he asked the question in December of 94, is Iraq about to fall to Iran? Saddam Hussein's still in power. He was in power all through the 90s. The U.S. made the mistake of leaving him in there after that first Gulf War. Well, I say mistake. A lot of the reason that some argued that he should stay in power was to just counterbalance the power in Iran. But that would eventually change with another President Bush, the son. I played the clip from him at the start of this segment. But just a short quote from December 1994, my father wrote, the stage is being set for an Islamic group of nations, almost certainly to be led by Iran as the prophesied king of the South, to push at the king of the North, the European Union. Iran has a foreign policy with a lot of push, and since the end of their war with Iraq in 1988, Iran has accumulated a massive arsenal of military weapons to back up its aggressive foreign policy. That was from 1994. You move ahead a few years after that. Of course, there was the 9/11 attacks, September 2001, and then think of the U.S. retaliation. We went into Afghanistan first and then Iraq later. And through it all, never, never, ever did we go after the head of the snake. Think about what's happened in the years since 9/11. Think about how incredible it is that the United States never did lash out at the head of the snake, the King of the South. There's a reason why that didn't happen. We wrote at the time, following 9/11, while the U.S. wants to eliminate terrorism and is becoming much more aggressive in trying to do so, its efforts will fall short. They're going to fall short. We don't have the will to finish this fight. We don't have the will to go against the head of the snake. So then you come to early 2003, March, that clip I played from George W. Bush. We're going to free Iraq now. The next stage of this war against terrorism is to give freedom to the Iraqi people. And what did we say at the time? This is my father, March 2003. It may seem shocking, given the U.S. presence in the region right now, but prophecy indicates that in pursuit of its goal, Iran will probably take over Iraq. That's from 2003, just as we were starting the war against Saddam Hussein. Over and over again, from the very beginning, even of the trumpet's existence, we have pointed you to this pivotal prophecy in Daniel 11. Daniel chapter 11, it culminates in that that prophecy in verse 40. But just think of what my father's been saying over the years. We went in there and we did topple Saddam Hussein, but that just cleared the way for Iran to take over. My father gave a Key of David program in 2005. Winning the War Against Terrorism was its title. Here's a clip, clip three.
So when if you're going to fight a war like this, it's very much like a boxer climbing into a ring to fight the opponent with one hand tied behind him, and there's simply no way that he can win. So we have to look at this as a unit, the sponsor and the terrorist. We must look at it that way if we're ever going to win. Now, as I said, we got Saddam, but now Iran and Syria are feeding terrorists into that nation, trying to destroy what we've already built or what we're trying to build. And we're not doing anything to stop them yet, if we ever will.
That's from my father's show in 2005. So we got Saddam, and everyone remembers those images. But then Iran, following the demise of Saddam's tyranny, then you had Iran and Syria feeding terrorists into Iraq. And we talked about the mission being accomplished, but we've also, we in the American sense, President Bush, everything's accomplished here. You've heard similar statements from Obama, and then now more recently President Trump. We've accomplished our objective. Now we've got to move out. But America's enemies, they look at this long term. And again, you go back to the 90s, you go back to the early 2000s, and Iran's getting everything that it's wanted. For decades, it's wanted this. That clip from George W. Bush, that was 2003. Free the Iraqi people. And then consider that clip I just gave you from 2005. We got Saddam, but look, they're going to make that whole area unstable. They're going to make it very, very difficult for U.S. forces. That was in 2005, that statement. You think about all that happened during the Obama years, the Arab Spring, 2011, all the chaos in Egypt, in Libya, in Syria, a horrific Syrian civil war, and then the rise of ISIS. You saw all the headlines over just this past weekend that ISIS has been completely crushed. And think about, I didn't bring these clips with me, but think about all the statements that we were making several years ago. My father, even on the Key of David, saying that ISIS was a distraction. As brutal and as horrific as it was, some of the images, the beheadings, burning people alive, drowning them, the mass shootings, all the rape and pillage going on in Syria and Iraq. Now look at it in hindsight. This was a movement that lasted 4 or 5 years. And during the height of it, there was one voice, just one, that was saying it's a distraction. Sure, Iran's going to play along. Sure, Iran's going to kind of help the United States of all things. to push back against ISIS. Here we were. We never did go against the head of the snake, the terrorist snake. And there was a point along the way where we actually solicited the help of Iran. Because, well, we've got to crush ISIS. That's happened. So now what? Well, now here comes Rouhani, his first state visit into Iraq, announcing to the world, we have embraced one another, Iran and Iraq, and we want the United States out. That's what's happening. This is old news. If you've listened to this program or read thetrumpet.com, this is old news. And yet it should be. It should be still getting headlines. It's prophesied. Another program my father gave. This is from more recently, 2010, a Key of David show on He Was Right. Here's clip four.
Some people said, well, we actually won the Gulf War in 1991, but did we really? We have several experts today that are saying that Iran has virtually won the war in Iraq, that Iran has won it. Now, I predicted that 16 years ago in an article, and we'll send it to you if you want a copy of it. And how could I even know anything like that? Well, it all ties in to what Herbert Armstrong taught in that booklet, He Was Right.
That's my father in 2010 referring to the He Was Right booklet and also referring to a forecast, a prophetic forecast that we have been consistent with for 25 years. One more clip from that 2010 program, clip five.
Notice what this booklet said, a short paragraph. In Iraq, the U.S. has done worse than merely not attack Iran. It actually pursued dialogue with Iran, soliciting its help in bringing the bog in Iraq under control by reining in the Shiites. In order to tidy up its business in Iraq, the superpower, quote-unquote, United States, requested aid from the world's top state sponsor of terror. I mean, that's reaching a new low as far as I'm concerned, and I believe I can prove to you from the Bible that that is God's view. We've reached a new low. Here we go to the number one sponsor of terrorism who's really winning the war in Iraq and say that we are their number one enemy, the great Satan, and we go there humiliating ourselves, asking them to help us settle things down in Iraq. Well, they must have a lot of power to be able to do that, don't you think? Are we winning the war in Iraq? And I tell you, we're not. And we're not going to win it. We're not going to win it.
That's an emphatic statement there at the last. We're not going to win it. And the thing is, we've said that for years and years and years. He had an article, my father did, in 2015, Iran gets a stranglehold on the Middle East. Who can deny this now? There's no way you could have predicted this, not without the Bible, in 1994, 1995, even 2001 or 2003. God makes it plain. He says, at the time of the end, shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen, and with many ships, and shall enter into the countries, and shall overflow and pass over. We identified Iran as the king of the south in 1994, and at the same time said, Iraq is going to fall to Iran. And look today at the region. Which nation has the pushiest foreign policy? Now, again, the Trump administration, there's reports it's coming out with its new Middle East peace policy following the Israeli elections in April. So the U.S. is still going to try to bring peace, as every U.S. administration has done since the establishment of the Israeli state. But it's not going to solve the problems. Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map. That's the head of the snake. So here's the president, Rouhani, his first official state visit. Today it's happening. The Jerusalem Post. Yesterday it had a piece about Zarif laying the groundwork for this historic meeting. And it says here in the Jerusalem Post, Iraq is increasingly a close ally of Iran, receiving U.S. funding while working with Washington's adversary. Think about my father's clip there that I just played for you. Reaching a new low. How could you put together a policy such as this where we fund them and they simultaneously reach out to our adversary? That's what's happening. They've received U.S. funding. Here we are there training their army, training their police. And Iran waltzes in and they both together, they say, we want the U.S. out. We're ready to go it alone. We're ready. We've got a strong enough alliance here. We're going to up trade from $13 billion to $20 billion. And everything's good. We don't need the United States. We don't want them. And they're saying this even in Iraq. It's not just Iran saying this. All of this funding. Let me just read this again, and you get the whole context. It says, Iraq is increasingly a close ally of Iran, receiving U.S. funding while working with Washington's adversary. This is the same model Iran has used in Lebanon, where the security forces get U.S. funding and support while Iran uses Hezbollah to increase its alliance with Lebanon. Well, no wonder Iran's quite willing to wait. No wonder they're quite willing to help us stamp out ISIS. They're looking at this long term. And they know now. They see the headlines. They see the announcements. They see the tweets from President Trump. We want out. We want out. We've poured trillions of dollars into these efforts in the Middle East. And what has it gotten us? What it amounts to is strength being spent in vain. That's Leviticus 26:20. There's no pride in the power, verse 19 of that same chapter. But all of the strength, all of that might, my father said in 2001, 2003, it may be hard to imagine, given the U.S. presence in the Middle East following 9/11, it may be hard to imagine a Middle East in which the U.S. is gone and in which Iran is the dominant power. It's not hard to imagine that now. Now we're seeing it. The first state visit. How about that? Is it significant? Same strategy as in Lebanon. Now it's playing out in Iraq. It says Zarif visited Lebanon in February as the U.S. was co-hosting the Warsaw Summit aimed in part at confronting Iran. Listen to this. This is the Jerusalem Post yesterday. In Iraq, Iran is showing it has been even more successful than in Lebanon. Overall, the Iranian model has worked in Iraq. It has increased its influence while undermining U.S. influence. It says the Rouhani visit will seek to cement the next phase. Let me just give you that last statement again. Overall, this is the Jerusalem Post, ho-hum, everyone says in the United States. We've got more important things to talk about, like a tweet or politics, or the 2020 election, or who's running for president. Overall, the Jerusalem Post says, the Iranian model has worked in Iraq. It has increased its influence while undermining U.S. influence. And that is prophesied. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.